I think before we start, we're all Chelsea fans here. We all have our own opinions. We all have our own feelings towards what's been going on, and we'll just have to respect and agree to disagree with whatever we say. I think that should be stressed.
Except for you and me, Collins.
Yeah, no, you can fuck right off, Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's only fitting to start this episode off just with a big, deep sigh, because, oh man.
Oh, you are teeing this up so good.
Enzo, to me, looks like a more agile, basically a young Chess Fabregas.
A Rolls Royce, man. Gotta sell it.
Messi is the Jorginho of international football. That was a dumb take.
To another episode of Flag Stays Down podcast. It's the Axel DeSasi special. Got a full house tonight after a 1-1 draw at City. Got myself Andy. You got Parker. You got Matt. Matt, how you doing?
Good. It's Sunday night. We're here. Long weekend. Wife was working overnight Friday night and then worked overnight 12-hour yesterday. So with an 11 month old that doesn't sleep through the night, that was fun. So up at kind of all hours of the night. And to add on top of that, we lost power at the house for about 2 hours at night. So that just made everything fantastic. But other than that, everything's good. Got to do some work on my basement. I've got a couple more walls to finish putting up before our my wife's March 15th deadline. So working on that. Good news, we did order new flooring for those that are very interested in how that basement project is going. We ordered new flooring. Yes, this is the third time we've ordered flooring. So we are hoping this one works out. Actually, I take that back. The fourth time we've ordered flooring. So I hope this all works out. I'm super excited. And it was a good Chelsea performance. What more could you ask for? Parks, how was your weekend?
Well, you ruined it. I was going to say, as the Brits say, third time lucky. But fourth time, I don't know if there's a phrase for that. So scratch that. I'm good. I spent the first part of this weekend recovering because I was in Vegas for 4 days, and I haven't been to Vegas since college. And so I'm 13 years older and a little different. The recovery doesn't happen as quick as it once did. And it was kind of funny because I was with some of my colleagues, most of whom were younger than me, and they were all gung-ho, like, oh, we're going to the strip, man. We're going to do it all up, man. We're going to get after it, man. And I'm like, all right, sweet, let's roll. And, like, it's just funny to see kind of the shock in their eyes when they roll up to a craps table and it has $100 minimum bets on it. And they're like, oh, that's a lot, man. I'm like, yeah, it is. We're at the Bellagio, dude. Like, what the fuck do you expect? So it's kind of comical to watch. That's not my scene anymore. And so it's just more of a supervisor role and just kind of oversee and there for the shenanigans kind of a role. And then find a table at the Flamingo to play some 25 minimum bet hands and play some Pai Gow where your money goes a long way and you don't really win or lose a lot of money. So that was my week. Weekend was good. Like I said, I spent the first part of it kind of recovering and then watched the Chelsea match. And today is actually like my Saturday because I have President's Day off. So shout out to that. And I get tomorrow off. So gonna enjoy it.
So it's gonna be a fun night for Parker.
Yeah, buddy, I got some pinball repair to do. So after the pot, I'm gonna meander downstairs and mix alcohol with electronics, which always goes really well.
Fun.
I definitely second that.
Collins, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Man, I swear, earlier I thought my wife poisoned me, but just to explain that one. So I had a 10-mile run today, training for the half marathon. And I get home and TMI here, but have had some issues on the John, we'll say, number twos. So I know every day she drinks this fancy shake she makes with cherry juice and beetroot powder and I don't know what else the fuck goes in there, but I'm like, oh, okay, that's supposed to be good for your digestive system. I'm like, why don't you make me one? And I do, and dude, I swear I was gonna die for like an hour. My stomach was on fire. It's terrible. Then I had to go see the in-laws at the exact same time. So it has been a night for me, but now I got my nice trying CBD seltzer for the first time ever. It's pretty good. Nice mellow night for me. So Parker will be raging, I'll be mellow, Matt will be his normal asshole self.
Yeah.
There are a few certainties in life, and that's one of them.
We're not talking Jorginho though, so no worries there. But we are talking about a 1-1 draw at the Etihad Stadium. Chelsea shockingly strike first, courtesy of former City player Raheem Sterling. Wasn't meant to be, though, as I don't even want to say we drop points. City still drop points, just not as many points as Rodri hammers one home in the 83rd minute. But, boys, it was, man, it was fun. Well, not a fun match to watch live, but it's fun to think about now. It's great to appreciate all the things there. But I'm curious what your guys' initial reactions are to the match.
It's the best we've looked all season. I take this as a win, as a big win. The way that we were able to put together, like we've always talked about, we're a team of two halves, right? We saw damn near a full 90. And not only that, but it was two different styles of how we can play. The first, we looked really good on the counter. City was wide open, which is not like them, but we were able to attack that and exploit that. The second part was defensively. I'm sure going to talk about this at length, so I will save that. Defense was phenomenal. It was more the fact that we had a consistent shape defensively. I haven't seen that all season. Usually people are out of position, kind of trying to track back. You don't know who's taking who. There was more communication, more unity in our defending, more so than I've ever seen this season. I loved, absolutely loved the celebrating defensive stands. That is something we have not seen. We have asked the question numerous times, who actually wants to play for this team? Who wants to play for each other? I saw Enzo just punch the sky after one of them. I'm like, okay, that's new. Enzo pretty calm, chill. Nope, he just punching the air. De Sassi was about ready to knock half the people out on the pitch, whether it was his own team or not. Levi was getting in on stuff. Malo Gusto, calm. Just an absolute fucking unit out there. It was a great match. Us not getting 3 points is the least of my concerns. I have no concerns coming out of that match right now, just based on the fact that we've always talked about how we see certain moments in a match, like, hey, we look good for about 5 or 10 minutes. Then we look like shit. Then we kind of look all right. This actually looked like a well put together, well thought out, well executed 90 minutes of football. I'm very thrilled with what I saw. Again, it's a draw. You wish it was more, but I take that moral victory, that massive step forward that I can see with a match like that. And I can see that boosting the confidence of almost everybody and taking that forward into the rest of the season. So I'm very optimistic. I'm not saying every match is going to be like that. We know that. We've watched enough. It's not going to be like that. But you start to see things click. This is a match where you saw the potential. You saw everything that we've kind of been working through, that everybody on the pitch has been working through. You start to see that cohesion and how we can look when we start gelling together, when everybody executes, when everybody's playing for each other. If we can do that, I am perfectly fine with that, and the results will come.
I did think of you, Matt, in that game, as you know, DeSasi is roaring and Colwell's on the ground after clearing the ball, celebrating. Every time they celebrated, I thought of that meme of Randy Marsh sitting at a computer, just the room covered, like, oh, Matt must be enjoying this right now. So, Parker, what'd you think of the match?
I was going to let you talk about it next, but that's with that imagery in my head, I think I have to go next. So, Matt, I agree. Like, the sentiment, 100%, you know, agree with it. In the back of my mind, it does still kind of remind me how far we have to come, or better said, how good City is, because there were a couple of gifts we got in that match. With their prolific number nine not converting chances that he does typically in his sleep. So it sheds a light on the striker debate, and our striker didn't take his chances. However, their striker didn't take their chances either. And so I think Holland probably had more than Nico. So all things considered, if everyone's on their game, City probably beat us that day. Look, this is an away match at City, who's competing for the title, right? They're in the hunt. Arsenal win big. Liverpool wins big. They're the next matchup. They gotta win 3 points. You know, they gotta take it. And somehow, you know, Chelsea proved to be the party poopers. The Chelsea City matchup this year feels a lot like the Chelsea Liverpool matchup of 2 years ago, where there was nothing between the two teams. The only difference being we played Liverpool in two cup finals, and the draws were separated by PKs, which we ended up on the lesser side of both times. So I'm always encouraged when we can play big teams in big ways. For me, when you look back at this season and you look at the high points, it's definitely this match, the other City match. So we're 5-5 on aggregate against City this year, right? We have the 4-4 thriller at Stamford Bridge, and then this, you know, 1-1 draw here, and the Villa match, to be serious, at least until we beat Liverpool in the cup final. Like, those are the three matches that I kind of hang my head on so far. The Tottenham match a little bit, but that felt weirder than it did feel like great. And this, I kind of rank this performance better than that Tottenham match. This felt good. This felt solid. It felt like our midfield had a backbone, and that it felt like our guys knew what they were doing, and our defense really has stepped up in a big way. It's really easy to look at our defensive shape and team and say that the one difference is Thiago Silva and attribute it to that. I don't know if it's 100% that or not, but I have to look at what I'm seeing and the matches that he has been playing in. We've stepped up in a big way defensively, and they haven't been against slouches. They've been against Villa and they've been against City. So it's been against prolific opponents that can score goals, top of the table or closer to the top of the table opponents, right? And then we play at Palace and we struggle more. So I'm trying to evaluate this as fair as I can and not just point fingers, but it does kind of shine a light that the future of this team and the go forward of this team, as we look into next season, we've got some bright spots to look forward to.
Yeah. And just to to top on that, I think one of the things to look forward to next year that I think is kind of rearing its head right now is something we talked about a couple weeks ago, this team finding an identity, this team gelling as a group. I don't know. The last couple games have been weird games to look at individually, and it's hard to find similarities, at least tactically, but between the last three games. So I don't know if they're, grabbing onto any tactics or, it's kind of just a game by game thing, but everything else seems to be elevated. Matt with the defenders celebrating, that was fantastic. You had Malagusto out there who was great off the ball, but he was also fantastic on the ball. Line splitting passes and dribbling at Doku, who's supposed to be dribbling at him. Good performance by him. As Parker mentioned, the midfield looked great, especially defensively. Enzo was still great, divvying out the ball when he had the opportunity to. But something Chelsea usually gets a knock for, especially this Chelsea team, is your attackers and their lack of willingness to track back and defend. Raheem Sterling was a big contributor to closing out space on that left side. And then you come back on the other side, and Malagusto and Cole Palmer were just in sync the entire night. Their distance, their movement, their commitment, the big thing, communication. I saw a lot of communication, a lot of pointing, a lot of looking at each other. That was big too. But then you had Nico Jackson, who joined Conor Gallagher and just rushing anyone he could. That ball came into his zone, he was going to go out there. Everyone seemed to be on the same page, which was a big turnaround from not even last year. Just a big change from a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. So I like to think things are on the upswing, but now let's see how it is when we play some crappy teams. Those are the ones we struggle with.
The one thing for me, at least about Enzo, like we all know how good he is. I didn't give two shits about his distribution or his passing. The amount that he ran during that match, that's something I haven't seen out of him before. Usually he's up so far ahead, and then I'm not saying he quits on the play, but you saw a clear difference in how he was getting back that we haven't seen since he's pretty much been at Chelsea. That speaks volumes. If he's going to be considered one of the leaders, and I think, or at least one of the people controlling the 11 on the pitch, that speaks volumes to what his worth is. That was probably one of the bigger things that stuck out for me, and something that was very noticeable is I would, every time, especially late in the match, I was just watching. I'm like, there's Enzo. Okay, Enzo's busting his ass to get back. He's busting to get forward. I'm like, this is new. Like, I haven't seen this before. I was very happy to see it. And if that's going to be his work rate going forward, oh, that is fantastic. So just want to call that out. I think that is a very under the radar type thing. That can definitely go a long way. And I think it just kind of sums up the team's performance as a whole.
Yeah. Sorry, Collins. I was just going to add the Sterling and Palmer, like kind of helping down on defense. That's something I started to notice in the Villa match, because Nico did that as a left winger as well. And that I really like it, because I think it shores up our defense. The only problem potentially is I think our guys are pretty gassed, and I'll just use Mudryk, because Mudryk didn't come back as much, but he was that outlet and he could sprint forward then and have that be a kind of a viable strategy. We're not going to see as much of that kind of going forward, because I think our guys, they were pretty spent after 80, and I think it was a lot of up and down for that. But I don't mind it, because I think we still created a good amount of opportunities and still had a good shot at the win and didn't give City as many chances at goal as they're kind of used to. And the chances that they had weren't great. So I think we did a pretty good job, you know, playing to them in that fashion.
So with tired legs comes substitutions. And we had three subs come on, I believe, in this match. There's been a lot of criticism. I don't want to frame this question in any particular way, but there's been a lot of criticism of Pochettino's subs in this match. I didn't see any problem with them, but what did you guys think? Parker, what did you think of the substitutions?
I had a slight issue with one. The Nkunku for Sterling makes a lot of sense. We've seen a lot of that. So didn't mind that. That was at the 64 minute mark. Still kind of, you still have the game, you know, not wrapped up, but like there's still a chance for counterattacks and stuff like that, right? 71st minute, Trev for Cole Palmer. I would have liked to see Alfie. Trev coming back in this situation was a little bit of a head scratcher for me, just because he hasn't played at all for us this year, and Alfie's been pretty, you know, pretty killer in late game situations, especially one where you're taking off Cole Palmer and going to a back five. So I just think it would have been natural and neat to have Alfie there, and then Cesari in for Nico, just to kind of have another body in the midfield, right? Take off a striker, bring someone else in the midfield to shore things up. Collins, you like to call him another Connor Gallagher. He's going to press at people. He's going to run all over the place, and he's good on the ball. So in those tight little situations where you can get one touch and send a ball long just to kind of kill off some time, didn't hate that either. So overall, I think it was pretty solid. We needed to control the position of the game, and I think we made the right subs to see off the game. This is total revisionist history, in my opinion. If we saw off the game 1-0, no one would be criticizing it. Rodri had a lucky-ish chance goal, but City were knocking on the door, and they scored, right? Like, I don't think you can look at the result and kind of critique what happened for those subs.
Collins, what about you?
Well, just off of the last thing you just said there, Parker, and there's a lot of revisionist history, not revisionist history. There's a lot of, you know, hindsight being 2020. And it, to me, it seems to be people having agendas against the manager. Now I've been very, very vocal about being on the fence for a while and then poach out. God, we did a whole pod on that. But I'm going to give him credit. You know, I'm not somebody, I'm not going to hold an agenda against him. When he does something right, he deserves credit for it. The subs were spot on. I can see the argument for Alfie instead of Trev, but I can see in a very tense match, a match where, you know, Alfie is kind of in that Connor mold. He's 100% energy all the time, running around everywhere. I think you need somebody who is a little bit more seasoned, somebody who has been with the majority of these guys. You know, he played with Colwell in the youth setup. He's trained with DeSassi. He's trained with Gusto. He's played with Chilwell for a couple of years. I think you want Trev in there at that time, just experience alone. The only thing that I would have maybe liked to have seen, I don't think Madueke or Mudryk should have come on early, and you know, in an effort to put more out there, give outlets, anything like that, because they're our biggest turnover guys. But I would have liked to seen Mudryk maybe, as you know, put him in that striker role, a striker on an island role, and just let him split the middle there between Akanji and Diaz on any out ball. Boot it long, see how far Ederson wants to play out of goal, and let Mudryk just go after it. But I can see why that didn't happen. You needed people who were going to defend. Mudrick's not a great defender. So yeah, that would have been my only kind of issue. But other than that, I think, God, Poch was spot on.
I feel like that game was calling for Mudryk. Just because of the amount of pressure that City was building against us, we had no outlet. Because to the points that you guys brought up, our wings were tracking back. Nico looked tired in like the 60th minute. How he made it that long, I don't know, but he was tired. And Nkunku coming on, it helps, but he's not going to be somebody who's going to go and challenge when you have that outlet ball. Like if you just pop it over the back line, he's not going to be the one to go and chase it down. Even when City had possession and they're kind of recycling through, you know, their backs and whatever, and Nkunku just kind of stayed in the middle. If that was what he was supposed to do, fine. He did it. I think that's something where you need somebody with speed to just go and run at people, right? We talked about, you know, what Connor does. We talked about Nico doing it. Like, throw Mudryk on for a half hour. Let him run. If anything, it might lead to a mistake if he's going to be pressuring those center backs. Also, it gives you an outlet. We didn't have a lot of outlets with Palmer, Raz, and Nico out on the pitch, you know, late in that game before they got subbed off. We didn't really have any outlets. It was try and get it to the middle and then just try and build out. I think that we needed Mudryk as that outlet. Do I think he should have come on for any of the other three that got subbed on? Not necessarily. You know, in a match like that, again, even maybe Connor, like, again, he looked tired too. He was running around. Enzo was tired. Like, everybody was tired. I think if you have five subs, you want to use them. I think in a situation like that, if you're seeing that you have been successful defensively with your wings also sitting deeper and helping defend, that's fine. Tell them that their priority is defending, but when they get the opportunity to break, use the fresh legs and go. Because, you know, you have Ake out there and Kyle Walker, who was bombing up and down the pitch, but he was getting tired too. That's a perfect scenario. I think as long as the right message was portrayed for them to help out defensively as a priority, but then break when you have that opportunity, I think that would have relieved a lot of pressure. But again, I'm like kind of nitpicking at stuff. I'm also not Poch, so more power to him. That's what I would have liked to have seen. I think it would have helped, but at the end of the day, it was still a great performance.
So turning to the Wonder Boys in this match, that back four, Gusto, De Sassi, Colwill, Chilwell. Where do you guys want to start? Because it was across that line, just fantastic performances.
I think we just have to give them their flowers. I like, defense has not been the strongest, you know, part of our game this year. What can I say that hasn't been said? We've wanted a team that has shown improvement. We wanted a team to gel. We've wanted a team that plays for each other, that plays relatively selflessly. Yeah, to me, this match had all of those things, especially on that back line. It was a selfless performance. For me, like, I thought De Sassi got a lot of the pomp and circumstance. I thought he got a lot of the shout outs. And you know what? He celebrated, and that's great. Like, and I'm not, you know, faulting him for celebrating those things. I also thought he was in the right spot to make those, you know, plays. Like, I didn't think he did anything like super extraordinary to make those plays. You know, I think back of like the Thiago Silva tracking back bicycle kick off the line clearances. Some of those, he didn't make those, but he made great blocks. To me, the standout was Malagusto, and spoiler, he's my man of the match. So I'll ruin that poll for you, Collins. But he was my man of the match because City had what seemed like one goal and one goal only, which was to attack through Doku that entire match. And Doku on the ball, Malagusto, mano a mano, not a ton of help. Later, we got kind of Caicedo to drop deeper to sort of shadow that if he got past him, but really kind of a mano a mano matchup between the two. And gosh, Gusto got the better of him 80% of the time. Doku didn't have a horrible game, but he really did a good job of containing him. That was only possible because early on they kind of went at Chilwell, and Chilwell kind of was stonewall defensively as well. And so it seemed like City kind of changed their tactics and went out through Doku and kind of consistently went through Doku then for the rest of the match. So Matt, you said it best in our group chat that our back line could have been our full man of the match poll, where, and that's rare to see all four of those guys as the standout performers in a match, but they really were. They all played really great, and I was happy to see it. And I'm constantly pinching myself and constantly reminding myself that Malagusto is 20 years old. 20, 2-0, guys, 20. Not 26, not 28. He is 20. And we probably haven't seen the best of him. So he continues to surprise me and amaze me. But the pairing of De Sassi and Colwell was great. Chilwell played more like himself. And I made the comment that in the rain, his hair slicked back, he almost looks like a John Wick villain. So he had a little bit of swagger to his game too. And so I was thrilled to see it, man. I was all smiles.
I'm trying to think how I want to approach this. For me, just for the sake of pissing off Collins, I'm going to go with Chilwell. Just because Collins has talked a lot of shit about him. Rightfully so. But I just like to throw whatever I can back in your face. I thought he had a great game. We know Malagusto can play. Like, this is nothing new for us. I think the level that he defended at was definitely raised. But we know he can defend. We know how solid he has been this whole season. So it's nothing new for me. Chilwell, to me, you didn't hear jack shit about Phil Foden in that probably first 60 minutes. Not a damn thing. Even Kevin De Bruyne, it like you didn't hear his name called out that much. And I give a lot of credit to the midfield on that. I think you can't reward the back line unless you also reward the midfield. That's been one of the biggest things that we've seen, is that midfield gets so out of whack. There was no first line of defense for the back four. They stayed true and stayed solid with their positioning, with their spacing. That helps that back line defend tremendously. Even when they did get through, everybody was still there. Colwell played pretty good. I'll nitpick. The only issue I had with Levi was that the two Haaland chances, Colwell kind of let Haaland go right by. Those are the only, but again, that's minimal in the grand scheme of everything, right? De Sassi just being the second coming of Rudiger, just doing whatever. You love to see it, right? Like there's no other way to say it. You just love to see it. Overall, I think that's probably the best that back four has ever played. In addition, that midfield, I think they had just as good of a performance as the back line did.
Yeah, Matt, this is going to shock you, but the left side was what I enjoyed, and I have to give a lot of credit to Colwell and Chilwell. Parker, as you mentioned, Chilwell shutting down Phil Foden early set the tone there. Yeah, I can't imagine Pep Guardiola's thinking in this match would be, hey, let's not use two of our best players in Phil Foden and Kevin De Bruyne. I can't imagine that he was sending Doku exclusively against Malagusto, especially when Ben Chilwell is not the best defender in the world. So props to Chilwell there. Colwill certainly, again, helped on that left side between Foden and Brunya. Yeah, you let Holland through on a couple of occasions, but for the most part, he had a pretty tight lock on him. And when he didn't, it was because he was going over to the other side where De Sassi was tracking really well. So yeah, I got to give props to that left side. It's a couple of guys that I've shat on a couple times this year in Chilwell and Colwill. So yeah, just like giving props to Pochettino earlier, I got to give props to Colwill and to Chilwell. And Matt has muted himself and turned himself off of video. So I'm going to say this right now. Connor Gallagher had a great game. He was wonderful.
I like to think of us, sometimes we're a bit reactionary on this podcast. Sometimes we're critical, but I also like to think we're fair in the sense of like, we don't have overarching agendas on who we hate and who we love and why we want to see other players. Like we're pretty pure hearted fans in the sense of like, we want our team to do well. Like as silly as that sounds, we cheer for our team to do well. And when they play great, we love to celebrate it. And when they play like shit, we say, look like shit. Like it was not much else to it, but like, you know, we want the best. We're cheering for these guys. And, you know, I think when you see pieces start to come together, it's really nice. It's really refreshing. And I remember a couple of weeks back, I think I used the metaphor of like, you know, the diamond pickaxe meme where you don't really know how far you are, how close you are to the gem till you get there. I think we're starting to see some of the pieces come together. It's a long, bumpy road, and we all know that, but you're starting to see what could be for this team. And that gives us hope, which gives us momentum, which then will come crashing down in a few weeks, and the cycle continues.
But it's all vibes, right, Matt?
But it's all vibes.
Always. Always.
All right. Well, Parker, I know you and I talked a little pre-pod, and we talked a little bit in the group chat this week about our next topic. You want to set us off there?
Ooh, I get to set us off. All right. Sure. So as our favorite perennial topic, Connor Gallagher continues to be in the news. CG is not, or is reluctant to sign a new deal. And so I don't remember. I think he is what, like a year after this year. So 1 year left after this season. So, which means he's 6 months away from being able to renegotiate deals with other the clubs, things like that. We all heard the rumors and stuff about Tottenham, them kind of sniffing around, offering him a contract, things like that. It came out that Connor wants to be at or around where Moises Caicedo is in terms of wages, which is £150,000 per week. That does not make him the most expensive player on our roster, and not even really close. So as a very open-ended general question to the group, is Connor Gallagher worth 150 grand a week?
Well, I'm going to preface this by saying I'm torn. So I want to hear both of your guys' opinions.
Yes. He is. Look at everything he's done. You know, we mentioned it last week when we were talking about, you know, we've always talked about what does success look like, who's grown. He's at the top of my list. It's evident. He has solidified a place on this team. He is a co-captain. What more do you need? He is I would argue that he is the engine of that midfield. I don't see how you don't pay him.
No, go ahead.
All right. Okay, so here's why I'm torn. I agree with Matt's gone again, so I can agree with him. I agree with what Matt said in regards to Gallagher, and you know, he's improved and you know wants to be here. He's part of the project. I know his work ethic and all of that stuff. I get it. And from the player perspective, yeah, you should be matching the guy who are you starting every single match with in Caicedo. And honestly, you know, you should be making more than Malang Sarr, and you should be making more than Carney Chukwuemeka and Benoit, but well, maybe not Benoit, and Axel. Maybe, you know, maybe they deserve a pay increase too, but, you know, from a player perspective, you should be paid similar to your peers if that's how you're playing. From the ownership perspective and from the overall club perspective, well, maybe not the overall club, but you know what I mean. You know, we've already seen that they want to trim weekly wages. And so that puts Connor in kind of a weird predicament, because we've been linked to three or four big name midfielders, you know, Frankie De Jong being one of them, who are going to require high salaries. And based on those fees and the salaries and just who they are, they should probably be starting alongside your two other $100 million midfielders. So do you want to be paying a squad player? Do you want to be playing a guy who's going to start maybe 25% of your matches and then come on as subs in the majority of the other ones? Do you want to pay him $150 a week? That's where I think there might be an issue.
And I get that. Totally. I totally get, like, do you want to pay a squad player that? And I also get the, you know, so I agree with your points you're making. Like, A, we're trying to trim down, and B, we're potentially have a couple of big name signings that's going to be more towards the top of this list. So, I mean, when I look at our wages and I look at the people and what they're on, it's already been rumored that Raheem Sterling is not kind of going to be part of this go forward project. He's on $325 a week. You've got Mark Cucurella, who's on $175 a week. Like, just Mark Cucurella alone, I would terminate his contract, and I would give, so Connor's on 50, right? So Connor's on 50. So you're at a delta of 100 a week. Take 100 of that 175 and give it to Connor. You have 75 left in the bank for future deals. But I would take that straight up over Mark Cucurella long term any day of the week. Like, Mark has done nowhere near, he has been nowhere near serviceable. And I understand he's been hurt part of the year, but he has been nowhere near as serviceable or nowhere near as formidable of a player as Connor Gallagher has been this year. It's not even close. But even if you just, so like, if you want to like fund future development, like if you can Raheem Sterling, you've got 325 sitting in the bank waiting to kind of, you know, go out. Who else do we have on this list? We have Malang Sarr, who's on 120. I don't even have to make an argument on Malang Sarr. Is Malang Sarr, has he been as good as Connor Gallagher this year, Collins?
Well, last question. Yeah, he's been great.
He's on 120. Take 100 of his, of that 120, and give it to Connor, and take 20 to the bank. That's about as easy of a business decision as you can make. Even if Connor starts 20 games or plays in 20 games a year, Malang Sarr has played in exactly zero this year. And he's on 120 a week. That's a joke. Like, that's an absolute joke. That's how you fund this deal. And you still have, like, other, quote, deadwood that you can take care of to sort of fund other players and whatnot. You know, we've got players that are out on loan, Rom, Kepa, Ziyech, Baba Rahman, Ian Mattson, that will all fund future players coming in with the sale of those players if we choose to get rid of them, which we probably should, because it doesn't seem like any of those guys are names that are part of our go forward project. That's how you fund the players coming in, and you take care of one of your own. Quite honestly, I'm surprised that Connor isn't asking for more, given what he could get in the open market. Dude, he could go to what's Declan Rice on? Like, is Declan Rice on like 250 a week?
Whoa. All right. Okay. No, never mind.
What I'm saying is, like, the top midfielder of their class, or of the pick of the litter, if you will, what do they go for that people that are kind of in that negotiation deal, like deal coming up range? And that's what Declan Rice was last year. Declan Rice was the prize that a lot of people competed for. And I'm not sure what he's on. I don't remember what he got, but like, I have to imagine 250. I'm surprised Connor isn't asking for something closer to that, to be completely honest with you. Like, I feel like the 150 is a fair ask. He's not asking to be the highest played player. He's not asking to be the top five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's asking to be tied with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He's being tied for 8th. I think it's a fair ask. I really do. When you start ranking up people in the organization and where you stand and what your role is, like, tied for 8th on this team, I think is a very, very fair ask. And seriously though, when midfielders, like, because what would Tottenham pay him? More than 150? They would. To get him over, they would totally. They would offer him a big contract. They'd offer him a 6-year deal, and they'd offer to pay him $200 a week. Like, to bring him over and to feel special, like, you see this stuff in the corporate world all the time. Like, to bring in top talent, you have to, quote, overpay for it. You have to go above and beyond to make him feel comfortable to make the move.
He would be Spurs' second highest paid player behind James Maddison.
What did McAllister go for? That's a good question.
Alexis McAllister, he's at 150. I just looked that one up too.
Do you think he's on par with him?
I don't know.
I do.
Connor Gallagher would be Manchester United's 4th highest paid player at 150. I don't know, man. I think he's lucky to be in Chelsea that he can ask for that amount of money. I think he's a good 100 grand player, absolutely. But I think our wage structure is so inflated that it allows him to be asking for that 150.
Thiago Silva's at 110, and Thiago Silva's leaving this year. Again, another 100 grand you can free up for him. Like, I've given you 3 legitimate people that are leaving, or I could see leaving, that they could give 100 grand to Connor's salary to make him whole there.
Well, okay, here's one, and I think this one, I'm going to lob this one to Matt. Is Connor Gallagher better now, and has he been better over the life of his time, you know, post Crystal Palace until now, than Mateo Kovacic, who's on 150 a week at City? Kovacic before he left Chelsea compared to Connor over the last 2 years. That's the thing that kind of, I'm all for extending Connor, but at that number, no. That puts him probably top 25, top 30 paid players. Certainly probably top 10 midfielder in the Premier League, and I don't think he's that.
So Kova's on 150 right now.
Yep, that was the deal he got when he signed.
I could see that. I think Gallagher is better than Kova now.
Well, I'm saying Kova coming out of his contract with us.
Gallagher is better than Kova when he was coming out of his contract. Gallagher is playing, I don't want to say at a different level. He is, you have to look at it at the position too. Kova is not a very attack-minded midfielder. He's more of a defensive mid. Connor, I think, is more box-to-box. So slightly different in that regard. But I think as of right now, because Kova, his last season at Chelsea, injured a lot, kind of a shell of what he used to be, right? And I'll say that as the biggest Kova fan in the world. He was not the player that he was for whatever it was, 5-6 seasons. He just wasn't that anymore, and that's fine. He went to City, he's getting 150. He's better than Kova now. So if Kova's getting 150 for the player that he used to be or the player that he is now, I think right now Connor is better because Kova barely plays. And Connor is out there damn near every single game.
It's also tough because City's got the highest payroll in the league.
Right.
And Kova on 150 is their 13th highest paid player. So they're, you know, where he fits in the City structure versus where 150 fits in the Chelsea versus where 150 fits in on the United structure, right? Like it all is kind of depending on how you compare to your peers on your team a little bit too.
Let me pose it to you this way. And sorry, I had to step away quick. Do you see Connor as one of our top five players right now?
Right now, yes, but I think that's part of the problem because, like I was saying, we've been linked to a couple big name midfielders, De Jong, Kimmich, you know, somebody to start in there. And so you bring somebody like that in this summer and all of a sudden, you know, Connor is outside of the top five players and he's outside of he's not a starter anymore. He's your fourth best midfielder. So to answer your question right now, I would say yes, in this moment.
Then I think it's a fair ask. I think 150 is fair then. If we're all in agreeance, and Parker, I'll ask you the same question, but do you think, okay, I think we're all in agreeance, Connor is one of the top five players at Chelsea right now. Pay him a top five salary. I'm not saying pay him Raz wages because that's fucking ridiculous. 150 to me seems fair. And the other thing you have to remember is back in the day, 150 a week was relatively cheap, right? You saw people going on contracts that were like 350. You see like the big name contracts like a Messi or, you know, a Ronaldo, a Neymar, you know, whatever. They're getting like $100 million like a year, which ends up being like 450K a week or 500K a week, whatever it translates to. It's astronomical. 150, meh. It's not the most outrageous contract in the world if we give Connor 150. Is he going to get 150? That's up to Chelsea. They might try and say, you know, 140. I'd be okay with that too. At the end of the day, I think Connor is fair to ask for that. Whether or not he gets it, it's a different story, but I don't see an issue with him asking for it. I think he has merit behind it.
In a world where Jack Grealish makes 300 a week, Connor Gallagher should make 150.
All right. Well, boys, I think we already talked man of the match. I like the idea of the back line as the man of the match. The only two people getting votes in this week's poll were DeSasi and Gusto. So I have a different poll for you. This weekend, Carabao Cup final. Win or loss?
Loss. For whatever reason, it seems like Liverpool's got our number.
I see a win in PKs.
Oh, that'd be poetic.
Because I think Liverpool is too focused on winning the Premier League. With the tight race that's going on, I think they're more so focused for that.
I'm going to go L. I don't know about it might be an L in penalties. It'll be close. But I think if we saw anything after Chelsea City, if you watched any of the other matches this weekend, the officiating has been atrocious and inconsistent. Some people would say biased. Some people would say there's a script written. This is Klopp with a chance to win a trophy in his final season with Liverpool. We've seen it in the media all week already. You know, talking about a Liverpool injury crisis. They have like 2 to 3 people out. We've had 8,000 people injured all season. There's going to be, I foresee, there's going to be some controversial calls that don't go our way, that do go Liverpool's way, and overall cost us a win.
Who is the official? Please tell me it's Anthony Taylor.
Dude, I'll take Anthony Taylor over anyone in the league at this point.
It's not. I saw it come out, and I saw it wasn't Anthony Taylor. But the one thing I was going to point out, Matt, is unfortunately, the match is sandwiched with Luton and Southampton in the league. So I feel like they can take their foot off the gas a little bit for us and focus on the cup final, because they don't, it'd be one thing if it was like, oh, they're playing Arsenal and then us and then City. And then you have to kind of like focus on who do you want to go after, but definitely some of the easier are the opponents.
And I see that the opposite way, because they're up by what? 4 points? They lead by 4 points right now.
Yep.
Arsenal doesn't look like they're slipping anytime soon. City's going to come back with a vengeance like they always do in the last 3 months of the season. Liverpool usually tails off at the end of the season. They got to win those games. Like, for Liverpool, if they want to win the league, those are getting to the point of must-win games. So I don't necessarily think that just because of who the opponent is, I still think they're putting a lot of emphasis on the Premier League and not so much on the FA Cup.
That's fair. And City's only a point behind them if they win on to catch up, because they are a game behind.
Yep.
And we've seen with Luton, and saw it today against Manchester United, they're not going to just sit back and absorb pressure and hope to hit you on the counter. They're going to go at you. And we saw personally that they will go toe to toe. They don't care who you are. So I don't think this is a game that Liverpool can rest a lot of players, that they can half-ass it, because they're going to get beat if that happens.
I think a loss in the Premier League is more detrimental than a loss in the FA Cup final.
All right, well, boys, that pushes up against the hour here. Any closing thoughts?
Shout out to Girl Scout season. Got some Thin Mints here.
Perfect.
My wife brought them mid-pod, so yeah. I go off camera and eat a Thin Mint.
All right. Well, on that note, make sure to follow us on social media at Flag Down Pod. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. But boys, it's been a great week, and hopefully next week we're celebrating the first piece of silverware under Pochettino. If not, we'll just eat Thin Mints.
Cheers to that.